content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start today with an article from Secrets of Aging, well, by Prevention Magazine. And we've been talking about good nutrition. We have one more section in good nutrition. Teas to drink for a longer life. Drinking tea at least 3 times a week is linked with a longer and healthier life, according to a study published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology. Research shows that when you regularly drink tea, the health benefits include lowering your risk of cardiovascular diseases and death. Although all true tea comes from the Camellia sinensis plant, all tea isn't equal. Its content of beneficial polyphenols and other antioxidants, as well as its color, depends on the amount of processing and oxidation it undergoes. Generally, the less oxidized a tea is, the lighter it is in color and the more antioxidants it has. Here are the 5 major types from darkest to lightest. PU-ERH. This is pronounced Pu-Air. This dark tea has a bold, earthy flavor. It's highly valued in China, where its processing method has been a closely guarded secret for centuries. Although Pu-Air has a lower antioxidant content than white or green tea, some research suggests that it may help lower cholesterol and reduce heart disease. Black tea. This popular tea can range in flavor from nutty and spicy to fruity and almost flowery. Popular varieties include Darjeeling and Earl Grey. Some studies suggest that black tea may help lower the risk of heart disease, fight colon cancer, and inhibit growth of bacteria responsible for cavities. White tea. This tea has a very delicate flavor. Because it's the least processed, white tea may contain the most antioxidants. Some evidence even suggests that it may inhibit cancer growth and kill the bacteria that causes pneumonia and cavities. Green tea. Rich in a polyphenol called EGCG, green tea may be the most researched type, with studies suggesting that it may help prevent a host of cancers, lower cholesterol, reduce inflammation, and enhance immunity. There are multiple types of green tea from different regions. The popular ones include matcha and Japanese sencha. Oolong. Somewhere between black and green tea in color, flavor, and antioxidant levels, oolong tea has a fruity or flowery aroma. Drinking several cups of it a day, consuming oolong tea extracts and oolong homobusflavins prolong lifespan and improve health span by curtailing the age-related decline in muscle activity, according to the National Library of Medicine. And next time we'll look at skin longevity. So now we're going to AARP, the magazine, in the Money Report section. Tricky truths that can lose you money. Some financial advice may be right, but could still do you wrong. A grain of truth can be as hazardous as a pack of lies. That's the problem with some financial pronouncements. Yes, they can be true at times, or even all the time. But that doesn't mean they apply to your situation. Over the years that I have worked as a financial planner, I have encountered a lot of these misleading statements. Tricky truths, I call them. You might hear from a scam artist, a financial firm making a sales pitch, or even a well-meaning friend. These are some common ones that can lead you astray. 1. Don't focus on investment costs. What really matters is investment performance. On the surface, this seems like the no-brainiest of truths. You get what you pay for, right? If you needed heart surgery, the last thing you would worry about is which surgeon was the cheapest. So if you want a high-performing investment, you should be ready to pony up high fees. But when you're investing a boatload of research indicates that the lower the expenses, the better. As the investing website Morningstar put it, the expense ratio is the most proven predictor of future fund returns, and our data agrees. Even the high fees caused by hedge funds, investment pools open only to wealthy investors, don't always pay off. Investor Warren Buffett famously wrote, won a bet in 2018 when, as he had predicted a decade earlier, a simple investment in the S&P 500, collectively shares in 500 of the largest publicly traded U.S. companies, performed far better than a basket of hedge funds. Two, if you had invested in this strategy back then, you would have doubled the return of the market. You'll hear this or a variation of it from a wide range of sources, maybe even a small voice in your head, kicking yourself for not having bought a high-flying stock before it took off. And yes, it's absolutely true that some investments like Bitcoin and tech stocks such as NVIDIA have trounced the market at times. But looking in the rearview mirror tells you little about what's on the road ahead. Multiple academic studies have found that the continuing success of top-performing mutual funds is short-lived. Research indicates that individual stocks on a roll can persist in the short run, but take on greater risk when the momentum peters out. Witness the stock of the movie chain AMC, which took less than a month in 2021 to shoot from roughly $50 to $275. It now trades at about $4.20. 3. The problem with term life insurance is that you're likely to pay premiums for many years and get nothing in return. Yes, the majority of life-term policies will expire without a payout. Thus, I've often heard the argument that you should buy permanent insurance, whole life, universal life, or variable life policies. But later in life, the costs of some of these policies can skyrocket, and in retirement, you might not be able to afford the premium. Term life is very cheap compared to permanent insurance, so I would rather buy term life and invest the money I've saved. Just as I'm very happy to have no need to collect on my home or car insurance, I'm quite okay to have a term life policy expiring worthless. Number 4, we have beaten the S&P 500 index over the past decade. It's certainly possible that the investment someone is trying to sell you has risen in value at a faster rate than the S&P 500, the most commonly used benchmark for U.S. stocks. But beating the index doesn't mean you're beating the market. That's because the standard S&P value you see in the news measures only the price appreciation of the stocks in the index, not the dividends they pay. Since 1926, nearly one-third of the S&P's total return has come from dividends. In the last 10 years, while the index has risen about 190%, the total return of the S&P with dividends reinvested was 250%. So, comparing the total return of Brand X investment to an index's price appreciation is like comparing apples to crab apples. Number 5, you insure your house and your car, so you should insure your nest egg. I agree, you should carry insurance in case your house burns down or you crash your car. And yes, you don't want your savings to disappear. But this line, often part of a sales pitch for certain financial products, fudges a big difference between traditional insurance and the portfolio insurance you're being pitched. The cost. When an insurer pays a claim on your auto or home policy, that money comes from premiums paid by other customers who haven't suffered a loss. But with products you buy to ward off investment loss, the only one funding your protection is you, in the form of fees and limits on potential gains. A conservative portfolio will protect you for less. And finally, number six, investing is conservative and guaranteed to underperform the market. It's true, broad index investing done right will get the return of the market less fees. But let's say you put $10,000 in a total U.S. stock market index fund with an expense ratio of 0.05%. That's 0.05% of your account value per year, a realistic fee for an index fund. If the stock market goes up 7% in a year, you wouldn't end up with $10,700, your original investment, plus a 7% return, but $10,695. So yes, you're $5 short of the market performance. But compare that to putting the same $10,000 into an actively managed mutual fund, where a more likely expense ratio is 0.65, or almost 2/3 of 1%. Assuming the fund matches the market's return, though odds are against it over time, you would end up with about $10,635, or around $65 less than the market's return. Compound that over several years, and the higher cost of an actively managed fund will make a much bigger dent. This article is by Alan Roth, who's a longtime financial planner based in Colorado and a regular contributor to AARP. Now, one more financial article here. Was this estate plan a mistake? This is by Jean Chatsky. A trust would protect her assets, she was told. Then she began to have her doubts. The problem. After her 44-year marriage ended in divorce, Carol Coonley attended an estate planning seminar in 2022. I just wanted to rewrite my will, she said. Coonley, 73, a retired medical technologist, got the new will plus something unexpected, an irrevocable trust. If she needed long-term care one day, she was told, Medicare would pay, while the trust would shield her assets for her two grown daughters, one with special needs. I had never heard of a Medicaid trust before, she said. Instructed to move her assets into the trust, she retitled her house, then froze. It's intimidating, she said. It can't be changed. Her question for me, was she doing the right thing? The advice. First, some basics. If Medicaid is paying for your long-term care, Medicare doesn't pay for non-medical care, you're limited to $2,000 worth of assets in your name, not counting certain things, such as a car or a prepaid funeral. Spouses can retain the family home and some additional assets. To qualify for Medicaid without spending their nest egg on care, some people put assets into an irrevocable trust. Then the assets are no longer yours. They are held for the beneficiaries you designate. Importantly, there's also a look-back rule. In nearly all states, assets you put into an irrevocable trust or give away within 5 years of your application for Medicaid will temporarily disqualify you from the program. To assist Coonley, I consulted John Midget and Letha McDowell, experienced attorneys who practice elder law in Coonley's home state of Virginia. Parentheses, regulations for implementing Medicaid are state-specific. End of parens. Some questions they asked. Does a trust make financial sense for Coonley? Maybe. Say she needs care 5 years from now. By one estimate, a semi-private room in a Virginia nursing home will cost $10,700 a month. Over 5 years, that's $642,000. A calculation Midget used to determine the usefulness of Medicaid planning. Coonley's retirement accounts and her home's value add up to more than that, so she could benefit from a trust, Midget thinks. What are the moral issues? You have to be able to say, I'm going to give away this money so I can qualify for a poverty level program. A lot of people can't do that, said Midget. But there's also no requirement saying you can't take advantage of the rules as they're written. What are the family dynamics? If Coonley's younger daughter had control of the trust, could Coonley trust her not to misuse the assets? She said yes, but also noted that the relationship between that daughter and the one with special needs is fraught. She wondered if she was setting them up for future trouble. Is this the only planning option? No, McDowell said. Coonley can kick the can down the road. If she moved assets into a trust at the point she needed long-term care, McDowell said, she would spend her own money for the first 5 years and then qualify for Medicaid. Anything left in the trust would be protected. The outcome. One last question turned out to be decisive. What took priority, an inheritance for her children or her own care? Coonley chose herself. I should firstly be concerned about my own needs, she said. So for now, she isn't moving more assets to the trust. I had these documents drawn up without asking enough questions and without understanding the answers to the questions I did ask, Coonley says. You might think twice yourself before doing something similar. Now we have a number of small articles here under the heading of This is 60. Being 60, well, 60 is just another landmark, and with age, we only move in one direction. But landmarks are worthy. They've been invented for a reason. I would hate to miss it just because it's uncomfortable for me, so I'm like, bring it on. And that was from actor Diane Lane, who turned 60 in January 22nd, just recently. Starred in Feud, Capote versus the Swans, and now streaming on Hulu. By the numbers, we're getting more social. In a recent study, 71% of Americans ages 60 to 69 said they have used a smartphone to access a social networking site, such as Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, a significant increase over the 44% who said they had in a pre-pandemic 2019 survey. Do you remember Peter Max? When I was a teenager, I was certain the age of Aquarius was about to bloom because of the Peter Max poster that hung over my bed. It was a peace dove with a white body and wings blooming with flower power. The word dove floating in bulbous pink letters above it. Wow, man. The artist was born Peter Max Finkelstein to German Jews in Berlin in 1937. When Hitler threatened, he and his family fled to Shanghai, where they spent about 10 years, followed by time in Tibet, Israel, and throughout Europe. His parents moved to Brooklyn in the 1950s and sent Peter to the Art Students League in Manhattan. After that, Max landed a gig designing a pop art flyer for a 1967 BN in Central Park. It made his reputation as a Pied Piper for the psychedelic age. Soon, Max's artwork appeared on 72 different products and the cover of Life magazine, eventually becoming the hippie wallpaper in dorm rooms across the land. Groovy. The color fever broke in the 1970s, replaced by a punk aesthetic. Scandals took over, including charges of income tax evasion and embezzlement. But Peter Max continued doing eye-popping artwork for decades, until dementia fogged his creative mirror in 2012. As of press time, he lives in Manhattan, unaware of the charges and far removed from the technicolor rainbow he painted over my teenage years. That was by Peter Moore. Why rescue dogs really do rock. It's been established that having a pet can extend your life and sharpen your wits, helping to combat the boredom and isolation that can flood in during our 60s as we retire and empty our nests. My book of photographs and stories of once-forsaken dogs, like the ones that are shown here, I photographed after they were adopted, suggests that adopting pets like them offers advantages beyond being cost-effective and honorable. One, you provide a dog with a second chance. Beyond just helping a dog in need, you are allowing a rescue dog to be themselves. Two, you receive companionship, unconditional love, and loyalty. Rescue dogs often have a surprising amount of resilience and gratitude. They have experienced hardship and adversity, which makes them appreciate the love and care they receive in their new home even more. 3. You save more than one dog. By adopting, you are helping to make space for another animal in need, which means other dogs will, in turn, be saved. Last year's 3.2 million dogs entered shelters. Around 2.2 million of them found homes, but that meant that a million did not. Now over to AARP, the bulletin. Under your health, ask Dr. Adam. A top internist and cardiologist answers your questions with surprising doctor-tested tips. How do I politely decline being weighed at the doctor's office? Dr. Adam, I understand why you may be uncomfortable having your weight taken at your doctor's office. It's not uncommon to be anxious, especially if you've been trying to lose weight and fear your efforts haven't paid off. You're not alone in this experience. In a survey, 384 women of all different body sizes talked about their most recent health visit. More than half of those who refused to be weighed said that being asked to step on the scale made them feel bad about themselves. They reported that it negatively affected their self-esteem, mental health, and emotional well-being. Even though it may be uncomfortable, unless you have an eating disorder or a distorted body image, skipping the scale may not be such a good idea. I consider my parents' weight to be a vital sign of their health. Knowing it is as important as taking their blood pressure or sending their blood work to a lab. If hearing your weight makes you feel uncomfortable, there are ways to get around it. It's appropriate for you to say to your doctor, "I don't want to know the number. Please don't tell me. And I don't want to look at it." When I have a patient facing the scale and they say, "Adam, I just don't want to do this. I feel too embarrassed," I turn to them and say, "That's fine. You can close your eyes, or we'll put you on the scale backwards. I promise I won't tell you what it says." Of course, I can't pick anyone up and put them on the scale, but I reassure my patients that I never look at their weight as a cosmetic issue. I explain that I need to know their weight to help interpret their blood work or to decide how much medication to prescribe. There are also medical reasons behind weight gain or loss that have nothing to do with how much you're eating. Recently, a patient complained about feeling lightheaded. I put him on the scale and found out he had lost 10 pounds. As a result, his blood pressure had dropped and the medication he was prescribed to keep his blood pressure low was now making him feel dizzy. If you've lost weight unexpectedly, it could be a sign of illness, such as an overactive thyroid, hyperthyroidism, or even cancer. It might be an indication of depression or issues in your gastrointestinal tract. Being underweight, particularly as we get older, can be a risk factor for several health problems. Let's say there's an 88-year-old woman who should really be weighing 130 pounds, but she's down to 120, and her body mass index, BMI, is low. If she gets sick, she's at a higher risk for severe illness and even death because she's underweight. On the other hand, if you've gained a significant amount of weight, it could be a sign of a hormonal disorder called Cushing's syndrome or an underactive thyroid, hypothyroidism. It can also mean you're at risk for several medical conditions, including high blood pressure, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, joint pain, and sleep apnea. The decision on whether your doctor weighs you is entirely your own. It's every patient's legal and ethical right to be in charge of what happens to their body, even if your doctor tries to convince you of its importance, as I have just done. You can simply say, "No, thank you. I prefer not to do it." And this was by Adam B. Rosenbluth, MD. He practices and teaches in New York City. Each Monday online, he answers your questions about how to make your body work better for you. Now we have time for a few more money-saving tips from AARP, the Bulletin. We're still under buy it used. sporting goods. To find deals on used sporting equipment, search sport-specific sites, such as Sideline Swap. A used Scott Speedster road bicycle was listed there recently for $650. New, it goes for $1,199. Large items such as bikes or kayaks can also be found on local listing sites such as Nextdoor or Facebook Marketplace. Furniture. Estate sales have moved online through sites such as auctionninja.com and estatesales.org. It may be safer to pay through these legitimate sites than to show up at a stranger's house with a wad of cash. The downside, you can't evaluate the actual item until it's delivered. Freebies. Build a free children's library. Enter your kids' or grandkids' age at Dolly Parton's Imagination Library website. Depending on your address, you may receive age-appropriate free books each month until they've reached the age of 5. Do this on Facebook. Search for your town's name and the words "buy nothing," and you'll likely find several pages dedicated to locals looking to give away items they no longer want or need. Such groups are a particularly good way to find gently used products such as books or children's toys and clothes. Scan freebie sites. There are several websites and blogs dedicated to sharing free samples offered by brands that are promoting consumer products. You'll have to share your name and email and postal addresses to get the deals. A few sites to explore include Free Stuff Finder, or ILFT, and Free Flies. Keep track of national food holidays, whether it's National Pizza Day, February 9th, National Pretzel Day, April 26th, or National Coffee Day, September 29th, you may find restaurants offering discounts and even freebies, often with purchase to recognize the date. Find an extensive list of such holidays at nationaldaycalendar.com. Then check the website for appropriate foods and drink purveyors or a deal that they offer. And lastly, go back to school. Public colleges include the University of Colorado, the University of Maine, and California's state universities allow older learners to audit classes for free when space is available. In order to do this, you can contact your local university for more information. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.